Hola, Brendan.
We speak American on this podcast, Alan. Hello. How are you?
podcast is the Not a Thing podcast, episode 154. We're happy to be on the air. I think it was really funny this between the last podcast and this one. I don't know why it took us so long to notice, but we noticed it was, oh yeah, it's been like 3 years since we've been doing the show.
That was a month ago.
Yeah, and I guess the math doesn't quite bear out because we've jumped a couple weeks for various reasons, so the numbers don't exactly match up to the dates, which is why I didn't notice. But yeah, wild. 3 years. Crazy, right? It's a thing.
We did it.
And we'll keep doing it with your support. Thank you very much for tweeting and Facebooking and Google Plusing or whatever, or not. And generally just listening
Not.
to the show and talking about it, because it's fun for us to do. It's hopefully fun for you to listen to. If it's fun enough that you would like to be on the show, please let us know via any means necessary. We may, in fact, even let you know, and then we'll just have you on. It'd be fun. Sometimes we like to have guests on the show, although you may not notice that if you go into kind of recent archives. But we do like having guests on the show. It breaks it up, you know. It's fun. Not that you're not fun talking to every week, Brandon. Well, let's see, jump into a story or two or three or eight, as the case may be, as we start our 154th show. The first one comes from the fair city of Oakland, where we will be saying "fuck the police" again. It looks like in this case the police are kind of fucked.
They've done it to themselves.
Following up on a story about how Oakland bought a bunch of license plate readers and were deploying them around the city to kind of capture license plates, just kind of randomly. It seemed like it was meant to be a thing that they would associate with traffic stops and stuff, but it also seemed like they were hoping to create a system like they have in the UK, where there are enough closed circuit TV cameras that are used and connected to centrally via a number of different systems that they use it for nominally for enforcement of paying what they call the congestion tax. So if you drive into the downtown area of London, you're causing traffic congestion, and so they want you to pay an extra tax. And the way they do that is they have enough cameras around the city that they can tell, or rather, enough cameras around the city that are connected with license plate readers and databases that they can tell when your car enters the city center, and then they flag you in a database. Now, these cameras are also used for law enforcement, for tracking, and possibly for all sorts of things. I mean, they're just cameras looking all the time. It's ironic that the country that, you know, I believe George Orwell is from, has the most 1984 like, you know, surveillance system built in. But they were trying to do something similar in Oakland, to have kind of a law enforcement based thing with license plate readers, and the system is bogged down. They've reached the capacity limit of the system they're using to store all of these license plates and all of the databases of information. And you might think, you know, Oakland had a fair amount of play about this when we mentioned it on the show, that this was the police department that was also looking at having drones. They also have a state-of-the-art system where they have microphones around the city that detect when gunshots occur, and because they have multiple microphones, they can kind of triangulate the position of where they are. So you'd think, yeah, pretty technically savvy. It's near Silicon Valley. They got a lot of ways to do this. Turns out the machine that they were storing all of the license plates on, their hard drive is filling up. It's it was a Windows XP machine that had 80 gigs of disk space, which means that this machine was probably from like 2002. So, you know, I guess we're triumphing over the surveillance state in Oakland because their IT department sucks. which is fine. I mean, it goes to show that you know, the technology is being applied very haphazardly in places. You know, it's not it hasn't reached everywhere yet. So hopefully,
well, it's not that they don't want to. It's that because of city contracts, they can't just go buy things. They have to follow all this bureaucracy.
Right. The red tape is working against them. So, I don't know. Don't go joyriding in Oakland and expect to not be photographed by the system. But maybe they won't keep it for as long as they'd like. This is not licensed to go commit vehicle crime in Oakland. However.
The crime podcast, is not a thing.
Right. The Not a Thing podcast does not advocate vehicle crime in Oakland.
In other cities, go ahead, but not in Oakland.
It's very likely that there were some city officials that tweeted things about this, and it's very likely that they had to retract those things. There was a service called PolitWhoops that we heard about this week. What they did was they made a Twitter bot that looked for tweets from specific people, government officials, you know, senators, heads of state, that kind of thing. And what it would do is it would catalog all of their tweets, and then if it ever did a query and a tweet was missing, it would go back and play back the tweet that was there and then retweet it, thus kind of reintroducing that tweet back into the world. And it would do this automatedly. And I guess the US one in June had its Twitter API key revoked, essentially shutting down the service in the United States, which was kind of a bummer. We didn't report about it on the show, but the reason we're bringing it up this week is because Twitter did the same thing to all of the accounts that were related to PolitWhoops that were available worldwide. It was another, I think, 30 accounts that ended up getting closed down. And Twitter's kind of rationale behind this is that it's an exploitation of the API because it's a bot that's doing the thing. If it were a person, then it falls under other issues about like whether you have the right to delete your tweets or not. And I am of the mind, if you put something out on the internet, then it sucks, but it's out on the internet. Now, if someone else put that out on the internet because they didn't want it there, then that's something that you can kind of work on and get, you know, and have things thought about. But I also think this doesn't apply if your job is saying things. So
it'll make people think more about what they're going to say on the internet if it doesn't just disappear.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing for politicians. There is this is where like transparency and accountability really, really matter. I mean, if social media and the internet are the new platforms of communication, and we're going to allow them a way to kind of hide behind things, then you're losing like kind of a major pillar of that transparency and accountability. So while I think for personal individuals, having something that would retweet your deleted tweets is not great. Although I also don't think that you should be able to delete your own tweets. That's something else. But
there should be like a time limit on that. Figure like 5 minutes.
Right, because you could have a typo, and that's fine. Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm guilty of that. Sometimes I miscount my haikus.
No, impossible. No, I think there should actually be a redact function on all social media that lasts from, like, I don't know, 10 p.m. until 10 a.m. So anything posted after 10 p.m., you have until 10 a.m. to delete.
I like that. I like that. That's good. Yeah, because there's all sorts of horrible stuff that could happen after the bars open up, really.
Someone takes your phone and you tell them the password because you're drunk, and then they're typing things in your social media that you didn't write.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's been known to happen.
That's a good point. That probably should be a service that's available to. But for political entities, this is really kind of a big deal because Twitter is really taking this stance about the ability to kind of forget things. And it seems very specifically targeted towards this service and politicians, which is, again, kind of not really standing with the pillars of accountability and transparency. So not a thing that service got shut down. I'm not sure if any competing services have come up around it. It doesn't seem to be too difficult to do if it's or if the complaint was that it was automatedly driven, which it does seem like they're saying. There are all sorts of ways to make things seem less automated. They should look up the Turing test and peek into that. Maybe grab an Eliza bot or two and program it into the API. But I think transparency and accountability are a thing, and hopefully some measure of that will rub off on Twitter's kind of tweet police and figure that out.
Tweet police. It's a special episode of Cops. Tweet police. What you gonna do?
Moving from one social media outlet to another, Facebook this week announced that they're developing a personal assistant that they're calling M, and they're building it into their Messenger app and service in the website, I assume, as well. But what you do is it becomes like another contact in your contact list in Facebook, your friend list, and you can talk to M, and M will in natural language respond to you. And you can the example pictures I saw were like it would remind you of birthdays coming up and help you with gift suggestions. So, I'm sure it has some database of things that the target person likes and dislikes, and so it can kind of form those things. It can recommend restaurants, based on your friend list and stuff like that. It does seem to have a lot of interesting utility that's kind of built in. It's also super creepy sounding. In that, yes, that's right. They are collecting all of this data and probably correlating it into some mental model or some artificial model of who you are for commercial purposes. But I think it's funny because this space is really crowded now, right? Facebook has it, but then all the mobile phone platforms also have their own personal assistant thing, right? Google has, I think it's just called OK Google, and I don't know if it has a name specifically. Google Now is the name of the service, and then Apple has Siri with their iOS platform. Microsoft is building Cortana into the Windows phones, or it has been in the Windows phones for at least a release, and now it's in Windows 10. And I just think it's funny because one of the things that in kind of software design and other things, they often emphasize the way to keep the human element in a feature when you're designing it is to describe or pretend that the thing you're trying to build is a personal assistant and would help you find something. And so it's a way of saying like, oh, well, this is it's a predictive kind of service. So like if you go to a web page for airline tickets, it brings up the last search you did because that's what a real person would do. So I think it's funny that it's like taking that and saying, well, let's just make an actual assistant. That's become a thing now to make kind of digital assistants for things.
Everybody wants a Jarvis. I'd settle for a Paul Bettany.
Yeah, I think while there is some value in kind of that predictive aspect of it, I feel like it's too easy for it to become clippy. It's just going to be the paperclip from Microsoft Word back in the day. It's going to recommend things you don't want and probably don't care about, and it's just another channel to be advertised to, at least that I see. The only thing that I use my personal assistant, my Siri, for is if I get texts while I'm driving, I want to be able to read them without reading them with my eyes. So I will have Siri read out the texts, which I think is, I've mentioned on the show, is hilarious because Siri does a pretty good job of swearing on my friends' behalves. So
sorry.
It makes for an interesting drive anyway. But I don't think I would ever want to interact with I don't want to interact with by voice to a lot of them. And then this isn't by voice, this is just like asking it questions, but you'd be typing them all. But I don't trust a lot of natural language interfaces. I think that most of them don't parse what I'm saying well. And I don't know. I think I speak fairly well. I mean, we've been doing the podcast for 3 years, 154 episodes now. It should be okay, but I feel like it. Most natural language interfaces don't work. And so I talk in this weird, stilted way in order to search for things. Like if I look for stuff on Google or whatever, it would always, it's very it's not like tell me about this, it's like keyword, 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 go, keyword, keyword, and this, not this. It's just faster, more efficient. I don't know.
I don't want to hear it unless it's in Majel Roddenberry's voice, which is going to be real hard to do because she's been dead for like 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. But I bet someone's working on that. That would be okay. moving from kind of digital assistants to more human assistants, although they're kind of assisted digitally. It's yeah. sort of digital. This is some news out of Amazon. So Amazon has the Amazon Prime service, which does kind of a bunch of things, most notably like shipping costs are reduced if you pay into their yearly fee. One of the things they're trying in a few different places, I think it's Seattle and New York, is Prime Now, which is a same-day delivery service that seems to be targeted for groceries and things that would be, you know, perishable. So you'd want them within a short time frame. So I think the time frame they're committing is like 1 to 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
which is about right, you know, for when you'd want to do stuff. But an interesting thing that they're saying with this is that one of the things you can buy over this service is alcohol. So you can get alcohol within 1 to 2 hours of ordering it. And potentially, if their drone delivery system ever gets put together, you can do this without interacting with a human being.
You can drink and drone.
Oh, it's great.
I really hope this test program works.
So yeah, you can. I think the potential for to be like a complete shut in is growing by the second, essentially.
No, Alan. I think you're taking a very pessimistic approach to this. It's totally in favor of society because it's a public safety concern. People get drunk. They want to keep drinking. They drive to the store to get more alcohol. Now you don't have to do that. It just come, you can stay at your house and stay drunk.
I think the logic in that is irrefutable. Yeah.
Yeah. I defy anyone to refute it.
So Amazon is bringing public safety to the forefront with by delivering alcohol within 1 to 2 hours with Prime Now. This is, like we were saying, only available in I think it's definitely Seattle because that's where Amazon's headquartered, so they can do all sorts of experiments with that there. But hopefully it'll expand out to a few different areas as they test it. I think you're right because no one wants to go on that beer run. You're right.
No, it's a hassle. Who's the most sober? Send them. Or how long is the walk? Who's got a bike? No, none of that. It's, hey, let's order a pizza. By the time we're done eating, we'll have more booze.
Speaking of booze, there was a story out of China. A woman was flying and I was stopped at security. I believe it was in China. I don't think it was the TSA that was involved for this one.
No, so, it was in Beijing.
Yeah, the US TSA gets a pass this week from the Not a Think podcast.
No, they don't get a pass. They're still doing their thing.
So in the security theater that is at the Beijing airport, they stopped this woman because she had a bottle of cognac in her carry-on luggage. And so rather than be forced to throw it away, because that's what the security would have had her do, she drank the entire bottle, which I have to salute her for doing that. I feel like it's something that I've wanted to do. But wow, going above and beyond the Call of Duty there. Cognac tends to be kind of on the high proof side, at least for, I mean, it's higher than like, you know, a certainly higher than a beer would be. I don't think it's quite as high as like a you know, a whiskey.
No, I don't know. I think it's up there.
It could be pretty up there because I know.
If you're drinking a whole bottle, it doesn't really matter what it is.
Right.
It could be mouthwash and it's going to fuck you up.
Yeah. So she drank, you know, what appears to be, at least from the article, a 750 milliliter bottle of cognac, which was probably pretty expensive too. I mean, that stuff is generally in the, you know, $50 and up range. And if it's something you're traveling with, it was probably going to be a gift, so it was probably a little more. I mean, it doesn't say it was the Remy Martin, what is it, the Louis XIII, you know, $4,000 a bottle one. That's it comes from, you know, 100. They're like 100-year-old ingredients in the mix. But in any case, she apparently drank the whole thing and then cleared the main kind of security line, but then it ended up catching up with her, and she was detained and missed her flight due to excessive drunkenness. So
she got Hasselhoffed.
So let this be a lesson to you. You know, eat. Remember, eat and then alternate with water. You know, whatever you need to do.
I don't know what eating or water you drink is going to counteract a whole bottle of cognac.
I think it's pretty impressive to do. Hats off to you, ma'am, in China. That was an impressive
display. She wasn't
display.
The only one in that article.
Right.
There were also the two brothers who had some sort of fertility wine. That was not allowed to be brought onto the plane, so they drank the whole thing.
Oh, well, I feel like, you know, a bottle between two people, if it were wine.
It's not just a bottle, it was a tiger.
Oh.
It's like a tiger bottle.
Okay. I'll have to look back at this story. We'll see.
It's pretty amazing. This one, there's actually pictures of the guys drinking it.
Oh, awesome. Great. Okay. Well, we'll link that in the show notes. Don't worry. It'll definitely be there. one nice thing, at least if they're flying, you know, you can use your small electronic devices on planes now. So you can use like phones and iPads and all that kind of stuff, unless all the batteries run out from them. Like I was on flights recently for work, and they had power outlets in the seats, but they were these weird, they weren't that weird. I mean, they were DC power outlets. They were the car adapter, 12-volt adapter power outlets. And I don't know who you are, but I don't carry a 12-volt car adapter that plugs into my my iPhone, you know, for flying. So I was not able to use my phone in flight, because I wanted to be able to be picked up when I got to my destination. So a company is looking to work on that with battery life, but not extending the battery life by putting in like different battery technology or bigger batteries. They want to put a hydrogen fuel cell plant into your mobile phone. And they did a prototype of this with an iPhone 6 Plus, and they were able to fit I don't know if it's off the shelf, but at least a commercial fuel cell into the iPhone 6 Plus chassis, and it would give something like a week's worth of battery life to the phone. The only modifications they had to make were for charging it, because obviously it doesn't charge the same way. You have to add hydrogen to it. And then also, the way fuel cells work is they are changing the hydrogen into water, combining it with oxygen, and then taking the energy from that reaction. And so you have to add a vent in order to vent the water vapor that is slowly being released from the phone over time, which I think this is amazing. I think it's great. I mean, a week's battery life out of a phone would just be cool. And also, it's using hydrogen. How awesome is that? Fuel cells.
It's everywhere.
Apparently, they're taking the fuel cell technology from some systems that were made to use or to power cell phone towers in remote areas. So they wanted like a low power or low power consumption thing that you could just leave out in a kind of remote area to act to power cell phones, so you can have communication. So I think it's funny, instead of powering the cell phone tower, it's powering the cell phones themselves. So we have that to look forward to if you can fit an iPhone 6 Plus into your pocket. It's the only downside is it currently only fits in the massive 6 Plus.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss the that technology. I'll wait for it to get just a little smaller, maybe.
don't be the first person to use hydrogen fuel cells. Just what don't could, be first.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Oh, the humanity. What could go wrong? Kind of speaking of what could go wrong, an interesting story about a different way to kind of deliver substances in liquids, and this is kind of a weird kind of thing, but there's some technology being developed, and the It's all at the kind of nano level, microscopic level, of like 50 microns across is the target size here. So like less than a human hair's width, and the technology they're doing is they're 3D printing tiny objects, and for whatever reason they're doing them in the shape of fish. I'm not sure why, but the deal is they make them in the shape of fish. And they add a little bit of like kind of a metal to the nose of the fish, and a little bit of a different chemical at the tail, which in liquid acts as a propellant, and it can drive the little fish shaped thing at some speed through liquid. And the point is that they could release these into a liquid, and then before they release them into the liquid, they would tag them with like a chemical that they'd want to disperse in the liquid. So something like a dye or something that would react to other stuff in the liquid. So they showed this in one example as something that could clean up toxins. So normally to clean up toxins, you just dump a bunch of the antitoxin in and then let it mix. Well, this, because they're all little bitty fish that have kind of a propellant in them, they will swim around kind of randomly in the liquid and will disperse the antitoxins very quickly. And so they were looking into this for ways of like delivering drugs into a system or cleaning up toxins and that kind of thing. The metal on the front they can use to magnetically guide them in liquids. The other kind of extension of this is they can do this in the human body, supposedly. So you have these microscopic little things tagged with some chemical that they can magnetically guide that swim through your bloodstream. The more I read about it, the kind of more creeped out I got about it, until I read to the end of the article, which I don't know if you got to. The article was sponsored by a company or I think it was a government agency that is looking specifically for biodefense.
Biodefense?
Right. So it's essentially, you know, it's a nano bio warfare.
That's not a thing.
Yeah. I think anything smaller than you can see that can then also kind of swim around in your body. I think there's all sorts of potential for misuse. So it's something to kind of keep tabs on and look at. I'm sure we'll look for these stories in the future for the Not a Thing podcast. It's certainly interesting. I mean, it's got all the high points, right? 3D printing, autonomous guidance, magnets,
drugs.
It does seem to be interesting, but it also is excessively creepy. So we'll keep an eye on this one for you too. Kind of another one we're keeping an eye on is a successful, very successful Kickstarter that completed a little bit ago, and they're starting to take the product to market to the general public. Is a company making the... I can't remember if the company name is XM42 or if that's just the product name. But whatever it is, XM42 is the designator for this company's product, which is a personal handheld flamethrower. So they took the technology for flamethrowers, you know, like the backpack mounted kinds of things that they would use in... Like, I think the last time they really, really used them was like the Vietnam War, but they're miniaturizing them, so they're completely handheld. I mean, it looks like a. I mean, it looks almost like a double size Dyson handheld vacuum, except it shoots flames.
And it doesn't suck at all.
Well done. Well done. Thank you for taking that one and running with it. But the promo videos for it are just off the charts. They're great. It's being a Kickstarter, one of the things that Kickstarters have to do is they have to have that kind of open, that video hook that a lot of companies kind of make very traditionally, and they have a lot of kind of slow dolly pan shots and then, you know, fade ins of people talking very deliberately to the camera and then measuring things. This one is just people having fun with flamethrowers. It's pretty great.
And of course, Detroit wants to stop the fun.
So they're being built in, I don't know if it was in Detroit specifically or in Michigan. The home state for the company is Michigan. And so the Detroit mayor wants to introduce a law that would make them illegal. Because oddly enough, flamethrowers of any kind are not illegal. And are therefore legal in almost every state in the United States, with I think it's one or two exceptions.
Two exceptions.
Yeah.
One of them, of course, is California. The lamest. I mean, we're the best state, but we're also the lamest state. Like, they don't want us to have any of the cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I might have to move because I want a flamethrower.
We should
at least, looks awesome.
We should at least establish the Not a Thing podcast as a trust in another state that could own the all the stuff that we want to buy that we can't have in California.
That's a good idea. I think you're onto something. I mean, these things, this flamethrower costs about $900.
Uh-huh.
And that's not usually money I just have laying around, but I am moving next week, so I do technically have that money. It's supposed to provide a roof over my head, but it could pay for a trip to Nevada and an order for one of these. Or Oregon. Oregon's probably better. I don't want to live in Nevada.
Yeah, right.
Wait, it's legal in Hawaii. Done.
If the Not a Thing podcast is broadcasting from Hawaii, you will know why.
We should start a GoFundMe so we can afford to get in on this Kickstarter so that we can get a flamethrower. And that might be the most 21st century sentence I've ever said.
Hashtag podcast flamethrower.
Yes. Moon tent, podcast flamethrower, and flat earth. Those are the hashtags of this podcast.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go look up some things, read a few articles, and draft some legal documents. And I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.